Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Salmon Cycling Classic on Saturday, June 29th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Wilsonville Memorial Park in Wilsonville. The Salmon Cycling Classic is a social ride through the outskirts of Portland featuring rides of 90, 60, and 25 kilometers. This ride shows community support for the development of the French Prairie Bridge, a planned bicycle-pedestrian bridge over the Willamette River in Wilsonville. Again, that's the Salmon Cycling Classic on Saturday, June 29th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Wilsonville Memorial Park in Wilsonville. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's about 10:30, which means it's time for film at 11. And it's time for me to remind you, which is my honor, privilege, as well as contractual obligation, that KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Darkside Cinema, open every night featuring independent, foreign, and art house films. The Darkside is located... That is located at 215 Southwest 4th Street between Madison and Jefferson Avenues in Corvallis, Oregon. More information and showtimes available online at darksidecinema.com.
Okay, film at 11 it is at 10:30, as always. And we're happy to participate in KBOO's Stonewall Day. Following this episode at 11 o'clock is Making Contact with special Beyond Stonewall information and anecdotes. And then at 11:30, Outcasting, in which veteran gay journalist and activist Andy Humm, or Hume, H-U-M-M, talks about the historical progression of LGBTQ life and activism since before Stonewall. But our participation includes our guest today, Stefan Silvas.
Hello.
And Stefan and I have known each other for about 25 years, and I'm surprised to learn you're gay?
Yes, the sad news is out, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, how that news got out is a pretty fascinating story, and it has to do with your Stonewall memory. So before we get to the quick survey of the films around town this week, please tell us your Stonewall memory.
Well, my Stonewall memory is based in Portland, oddly enough. When I came to Portland to be a young actor, I found myself being cast in a play by Doric Wilson called Street Theater, which was about the riots, which Doric Wilson actually participated in 1969 at Greenwich Village. And I was a complete neophyte. I knew nothing about the Stonewall riots. I had no idea that they had occurred, and I had no idea that the ramifications of that riot, that protest, were still being felt. So I was cast as one of the quote-unquote drag queen characters, which I was kind of upset about at first, and then realized that it was one of the plum roles in the play, okay. and I enjoyed it very much. But and Doric Wilson came. Doric Wilson was an established off-Broadway playwright of some renown. And again, he had been part of the uprising at Stonewall. So we had him on hand for a few days, and it was through him that I received this education that I had been lacking for so long.
And what year was this about?
I think it was 1984, 1984, so ancient history. And then the play, it was an attempt to found a gay theater in Portland. There had been one or two attempts prior to this, and this one didn't take either. It was Street Theater was really the first and the last production. And we were using what used to be called the Chateau Labam. The Labam Performance Group had a theater that was on Savior Street between 22nd and 23rd. So that's where we were performing. And So after the finish of the play, which was a Saturday night, Sunday the following day was the Portland Gay Pride Festival and the parade. And that was really the first one that I'd attended. And so my coming out, as I've told you, at least to my parents, because at that point in time I was out to friends and certainly some family members. What happened was KGW TV, for reasons known only to them, had decided that within these thousands of people thronging the streets of Portland to celebrate Gay Pride, that I would become the mascot. And so the cameras kept training themselves on me. And then my parents are back home in rural Washington State having dinner and watching KGW News. And there's their own Sonny Jim waving a sign that said something probably very clever like out and about, or who knows, and you know, dropped their forks and had to deal with the fact that I was.
But besides the shock of it, they were supportive and
didn't
really care.
They got there. I mean, yeah. I was very fortunate, and my parents were very liberal people. Again, it was the way it came about. I had every yes. intention of sitting them down and having the kind of, you know, a Hallmark episode with, you know, talking things over and all of that. But, it, you know, KGW preempted that by...
On a very special episode of the Silvis family. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, a quick survey of the movies going around. Then we'll return to Stefan and other aspects of Stonewall. But... for example, the Academy has Creature from the Black Lagoon. Seems rather banal after given the context, but there it is. The Living Room Theater is opening Yesterday, which is the weird-sounding movie about the...
I think it sounds fantastic.
Okay.
I can't wait to see it.
It's about all the Beatles' music suddenly vanishing from the face of the earth.
And a number of other things, too, as we find out over the course of the movie. But and, only one person remembers.
Oh, that's right. Framing John DeLorean is opening, and this is a documentary that I've seen. It's a quasi-documentary. It has reenactments, etc. And it's a pretty fascinating story, if you know anything about the great stainless steel hope of automobiles. And also an anniversary of Do the Right Thing is playing for a week. Clinton Street has a presentation of the artistry of Charles Chaplin. The Kiggins is showing Buddy, the documentary about service animals, which is apparently a quite touching
Always
movie.
Makes me cry.
Walking on Water about Christo, and Echo in the Canyon, which is a survey of the great California rock, folk rock scene of the 60s.
Oh, that looks great too. Dear listeners, I have seen nothing.
No, that's
okay.
Shame
to say.
Northwest Film Studies Center continues with its Jewish Film Festival films, and that's ending next week, so we'll get around to watching some of those. Hollywood, Cabin Boy, I guess it's got a cult.
It does.
Xanadu, another cult movie with Olivia Newton-John. The Warriors,
one of the great
street riot movies. Raisin Arizona, which will be playing at Rooster Rock. Yeah, it's outdoors. And then, guess what? Do the Right Thing. Then, of course, the Avalon Theater has four new movies opening today. Usually they are kid adjacent because of the location. But, you know, generally you'll be able to see the superhero movies that have just gone, you know, second run or whatever. And then finally, here's what's opening in the real world around here. The Fall of the American Empire. It may be opening here, besides Yesterday. And
really, the only biggie is Yesterday.
The big one is. And then Maiden may be playing here, or at least in cities adjacent. Mm-hmm. That's a documentary about the women's yachting team that did that world race back in 88. DVD on Tuesday is The Best of Enemies, and Styx, which is yet another movie about somebody taking a cruise, in this case by herself. It's a drama. And she ends up having to, she's a doctor, a Doctors Without Borders type doctor who ends up helping a ship of refugee immigrants. And so that's about it. Okay, but now we come to the part of the show that saddens us all. That's the part where we take a look at some of the people who've passed away
people.
Since last Friday. And there, we'll start with Billy Drago.
Well, so you may not know his name, but you know this actor. If you have seen a movie any time in the last 30 years, he's such a striking-looking guy, probably very sweet, but
he's most famous for being the killer in The Untouchables. Kevin Costner. He's the guy who got thrown off the building.
Right, but does he have a huge filmography. He's in 116 different productions, and I don't know that you could really have a Billy Drago film festival. He was never the primary character, or rarely was, but boy, was he a good bad guy. He was so menacing and creepy at the same time, and I like to believe that he was probably a sweetheart in real life, as so many of these guys are. But
you like to think so.
I like to think so, but he had quite a career, and I call them that guys, you know, people whose faces are like, oh, it's that guy who, you know, secondary players who bring so much to the movie, much to the part.
Here's that gal, Susan Bernard, who was in Faster Pussycat, Kill.
Well,
and
that's a seminal.
I think that she's the last surviving member of that movie, although I could be wrong about that. Mm. And then Peter Whitehead, the famous photographer and filmmaker, who is partially the inspiration for Blow Up, and partially a part of the whole traveling circus of the Rolling Stones. And then here's somebody that you know a lot about, and you can even pronounce her name.
Edith Skob.
Yes. What's she famous for?
She's famous for a number of things. And why is the primary film escaping me?
Eyes Without a Face.
She's most famously known for that, of course. But if you've ever seen Buñuel's Milky Way, she plays the Madonna figure in that. But Skob is very much like some of the feature players that you were talking about, Mona, earlier, that she appears in everything. Eyes Without a Face is probably the only film where you could say that Skob was the star. But her filmography as well is quite impressive. I don't know the exact number.
It's extremely long.
I didn't realize she's in one of my favorite bonkers movies, Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Right. She was making movies as recently as 3 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, she was in Holy Motors.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also she had an extensive stage career as well. She was primarily a stage actress. So, it's very sad that she has passed away.
Okay, good. Well, that's about it for that. So now we get to talk about Stonewall. And I always have to pause briefly before I say that so I can think it's Stonewall, not Stonehenge. Because last night I listened to a In Our Time episode from BBC's channel Radio 4 on the history of the Celts and Druids and things, and I just get very confused. So
there are costumes involved, though, for both.
For both,
yes. Yes.
So one way we can kick this off is that we've both seen the movie Stonewall, directed by Roland Emmerich from a few years ago, which has virtues but mostly faults, in that it's a kind of an obvious story of a coming of age and coming out, grafted onto this significant historical event.
Well, yeah, and then again, the name Hallmark rears its ugly head again. to a certain extent, you say that it does capture some of the spirit of the uprising, the rebellion, the riot.
Yeah, there's some accuracy, and it's actually filmed on the location.
That's true as well, although the street itself, whoever the designers are, it looks like Doris Day may appear at any moment.
All right, there's an autumnal kind of glow.
Exactly. I mean, and we're talking 1969, and so the grittiness that you would have found down in Grimsfield to that point has been erased completely. So we already are in this sterilized atmosphere, where we'll get this whitewashed story. Again, I think the primary complaint about the film, and I would join the kvetchers when it comes to this assessment, is that the riot was not started by a young, chiseled white boy, that it was actually started by a transgendered person who threw the brick, who basically... through the brick.
Yeah.
So because of that, we have this kind of white hero that's materialized, which is problematic.
Mm-hmm. And plus, the movie posits the theory that it was a funeral for Judy Garland, that had inspired this. And that makes it very, that seems very simplistic. But in fact, that may have some cause for, you know, being fed up when the cops came for their routine roust. And they always picked on the most vulnerable members of the gay community, right?
Right. Yes. In Doric Wilson's play in Street Theater, he suggests that it is because of Judy Garland's funeral that was partially the spark, if not the primary spark, because people had gathered at the Stonewall to mourn, basically. And so they found that this period that they had set aside for themselves to talk about Judy Garland, to reminisce about her career and her importance within the gay community, was suddenly being violently disrupted by the appearance of cops yet again, who had already raided the Stonewall some days before this. So this was like a repeat performance from them. And it was enough was enough. We can't even gather to, you know, talk about Summer Stock and The Wizard of Oz without being clubbed by, you know, Lily Law, as the cops were known.
So what was the point? These clubs were almost uniformly owned by the mafia, apparently. And so the cops were in this precinct were in league with the mob in order to do the rousting? Or how did that work?
It's difficult to know exactly what was going on. If I remember correctly, I think Stonewall, the tavern, was owned by the Gambino family. Mm. I mean, it was part of one of their holdings, etc. There was always payoffs that were going on. And there's also a suggestion that I've read that the Gambino family was also using Stonewall and some other gay establishments that they had controlled or were in control of to help in some blackmail schemes against some Wall Street or politicians, Wall Street figures, bankers, etc., who might go to the clubs. They could be seen by someone in the mafia, and then they could be blackmailed.
I see.
So, I mean, that's part of the lore as well. I don't know.
One of the most remarkable things about the movie takes place in the end credits when the owner of the particular club, or at least the manager of Stonewall, is heralded or honored after being really mean to his clientele and contemptuous of them. It turns out he becomes a gay activist and was honored at a gay pride parade some 20 or 30 years later. He's played by Hellboy in the movie, actor who played Ron Perlman. One thing that I would find interesting about Hollywood films is that certain movies made around the time, the era of the rise of the gay liberation or gay rights movement that were coming out were actually surprisingly liberal. And I'm thinking of movies, or progressive, I guess I should say. I'm thinking of movies like Advising Consent, right, which is distinguished for...
Otto Preminger's film, was it 62? It's the first time that an American film actually has a scene that takes place in a designated gay bar.
Yeah.
We have Don Murray, who comes in to, you know, confront an old flame.
And a blackmailer.
And a blackmailer as well. So that that was kind of a pivotal, important moment for gay audiences, certainly at that period of time, because they had never been represented before. Mm-hmm. Now we can look at that scene. I think the scene in 1961, 62, whenever it was, is very progressive. However, now we would have qualms with it.
Yes, of course.
It is very dated, but nonetheless, it was one of those moments. And another one that comes to mind is the televised version of the Compton and Green musical Applause, which was the Broadway musical version of All About Eve, which starred Lauren Bacall. It was televised by CBS sometime in the 70s, and there's a scene in the play, which is part of the televised production as well, when the Margot Channing character, who's played by Bacall, after her triumph on the stage of the opening night, decides to celebrate in a Greenwich Village gay bar.
Okay.
That's probably not Stonewall, but it's a little bit more glamorous than Stonewall. One of the most important numbers from that musical, I'm Alive, is primarily performed in this club. And it was televised by CBS. And that, too, is one of those moments when gay audiences could see themselves as being actually portrayed and sympathetically within mass media. So that was as shocking as the scene in Advise and Consent.
Well, I would also recommend the movie. This will may come as a surprise to some, but it's called The Detective, and it stars Frank Sinatra. And it's a rather old-fashioned movie, except for one factor, which is that the crime at the center of the movie takes place within the underground, as of then, gay community, and has recreations of some of the events, some of the locales that actually also appear in Stonewall, the movie, that is dock areas and certain gay bars,
right,
and other things. And it also approaches that whole sense of inner conflict and the shame and the other things that one hopes that through the process of activism, people begin to lose or shed, and young people presumably will then grow up in a more welcoming environment without a sense of distance or inner something. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, do you see a difference since over the course of your lifetime? People are getting killed on the streets of southern towns because of their identity, because of being brave about their identity. So it hasn't progressed in all sections of society, but
No, it has. I mean, within my lifetime, it's as if I've lived for 100 years. I mean, things have changed dramatically. I grew up just north of Portland in rural Washington State, and there would have been no possible way that I could have been out at my high school. And yet, when I go back to my high school, they now have a straight gay alliance club that kids join. Kids can be openly out as sophomores, juniors, mm-hmm. and seniors. To me, that's science fiction. That could simply not have happened when I was there. I would have risked my own life probably.
Jeez.
So the situation has changed. There's a good article in The Atlantic, I think, that's just come out on how successful the gay rights movement has been, and LGBTQ issues have been triumphing. And I think a good sign of that, disappointing to some, is the disappearance of gay bars and clubs. And we were talking about Stonewall, but gay bars and clubs are disappearing, I think, because the historic need for them is no longer there.
Mm, I see.
That seems to be a good indication that LGBTQ individuals now are being embraced by the wider culture, or at least have more access to that culture. So that, too, I think, is a good sign of progress.
Now, speaking of progress, there's also regression, and I'm changing gears here a little bit to discuss some things happening on university campuses. For example, in Wisconsin, explain who Frederick March is, the actor, the late Frederick March.
Oh, the late Frederick March is one of my favorite actors. He was a Wisconsin boy.
And he's in Advise and Consent also, by the way, if you happen. Did he play the president? President?
Maybe.
No, it's not. It's somebody else.
French at Tone, though.
French at Tone, yeah.
Yeah,
sorry.
It's French at
Tone. They look the same. Anyway, go ahead.
No, Frederick March would be 3 days of May.
Yeah.
So Frederick March, a graduate of University of Wisconsin, when he became first a leading man on stage, Broadway stage, and then became a leading film star in the 30s onwards, was always very generous to his alma mater and gave money and actually financed the refurbishment of a small theater on the campus of University of Wisconsin in Madison, but also helped bankroll a theater at one of the satellite campuses in Oshkosh, which bore his name up until recently. And you've discussed this on the show, but
right.
Frederick March became one of the leading liberals in American culture. I mean, if we're going to use the word woke, Frederick March was woke before anyone else was. He was vital in gaining support within the film community for the civil rights movement. He was one of the co-founders, along with Lillian Hellman, of the Anti-Fascist League during the build-up toward World War II. He was a supporter of the Republican cause in Spain, which had him labeled then afterwards a premature anti-fascist. Mm. So march was always marching in the right direction, as it were. I mean, when Martin Luther King Jr. was in prison in Birmingham, Harry Belafonte knew to turn to march to actually get money for his bail. Hmm. But anyway, suffice to say, march was very progressive, but there was this black spot in his past as a young man when he was on the campus of University of Wisconsin. He belonged to a fraternity that thought it was very clever to call themselves the Ku Klux Klan. Mm. And so now March is being portrayed as this sheet-wearing racist rather than a know-nothing provincial Wisconsin 19-year-old who came to the big city of Madison, was at the university, found himself in a fraternity that was behaving in this silly, stupid way. Rather than see him as a naive neophyte, he's now this ogre, and so his name's been stripped from buildings, etc.
Plus an architect who designed some buildings is also...
There were a couple of people who were associated with that particular fraternity, which, it has to be said, there's no evidence that they had any significant or at all any relationship to the national KKK movement. There's nothing.
And now Lillian Gish is having a movement to have her name removed from a theater at Bowling Green University.
In Ohio. Yeah.
Because she was in Birth of a Nation?
Yes. Okay. Primarily because of that and the fact that she never... said anything critical against that that film or Griffith or her participation.
Well, she had plenty of time. She lived to
97 or 98 or something.
Well, so what's your view on this? Is this, you see both sides or do you?
I think this will not be popular, but I can see both sides when it comes to Gish. Because of what you've just said, that she lived to be, you know, well into her 90s and never felt it necessary to address having participated in and having still been celebrated.
She only died in 1993.
Yeah.
I mean, there was time to be woke.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And this film, I mean, for all of its innovation, and it's inescapable, it's a film that we're going to be saddled with forever because of its innovations. Nonetheless, was also serving as a recruitment guide for the Ku Klux Klan. So the history behind that is far more significant than March's escapades as a 19-year-old in Madison. And again, I think if March had lived to now, he himself would have been very critical and would have come out and explained to us exactly what his thinking was, if we can even, you know, refer to it as that, when he was 19. Whereas Gish, again, had, you know, 90 years, well, 80 years at least, to address that film and never did.
And interestingly enough, the Screen Directors Guild kicked D.W. Griffith himself out of their organization and took away a memorial prize in the 40s.
Yeah.
In the late 40s.
Yeah, that's true.
So
that's
they were... Anyway, well, this has been... Film at 11, and it is indeed almost 11 o'clock. Our guest has been Stefan Silvas.
Thank you.
And Mona has been here also. Me too. I don't know why, but I need to say all of our names again. And stay tuned for Making Contact with their special Beyond Stonewall episode. And we'll be back, Mona and I will be back next week with a full panoply of films and ideas and reactions.
Yes. Thank you, Stefan.
Thank you.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 10:59 a.m. Stay tuned for Making Contact at 11 with Beyond Stonewall. Is there a little more I can tell you about that? No, you'll just have to keep it locked right here at your community radio. That's right, your community radio, which means the responsibility for maintaining and running it is your responsibility. However you get involved, once you get involved in a way that it makes sense for you to become a member of the KBOO Foundation, you can see about making yourself a member of the KBOO Foundation Board of Directors and take a more concrete role in guiding the station to represent and promote the interests of the community in having an electronic media outlet that is here to serve the community. Think about that. And think about how and why KBOO was able to bring you a program like this.
When you think of Pride, parades and parties might come to mind. It might be hard to imagine that the worldwide LGBT celebrations were sparked by a neighborhood uprising in New York in 1969. At the time, the uprising was heavily criticized, but by 2014, even the president was paying tribute to what began that night at the Stonewall Inn.
This year we mark the 45th anniversary of Stonewall, and I know some of you were there. And this tremendous progress we've made as a society is thanks to those of you who fought the good fight, and to Americans across the country who marched and came out and organized to secure the rights of others.
But how many of us really remember?